Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello there and welcome to, welcome to Wiki Politiki today, where we are going to jump right in with my guest, because if we look at the foundation for what I call political climate change, where we actually can change from pulling against one another to pulling together in the same direction, where we shift from the tug of war to the tug of peace, I think it's very, very important that we begin at the beginning. And what better place to look at evolution than starting with biology? Because biology wrote the book on evolution. My guest today has written the book on new biology, Bruce Lipton. He's the author of Biology of Belief. He is one of the originators of the new science of epigenetics, which we'll hear more about today. And he and I wrote a book together called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future and a Way to Get There from Here. And as we look at our very challenged presence, it's going to be interesting to see how we get to our positive future. And today, I just read this morning. I'm going to read you this whole little account. 15,000 scientists got together and created something called Warning to Humanity, a Second Notice. The first notice was 25 years ago, 1992, and I guess things haven't gotten that much better since then. Let me read this to you. If not checked, many of our current practices put at serious risk the future that we wish for human society and the plant and animal kingdoms, may alter the living world that it will be unable to sustain life in the manner that we know. The new warning is entitled World Scientists Warning to Humanity, a Second Notice. I guess we slept through the first alarm. It was published in Bioscience Journal. It says that we have failed to make sufficient progress in solving our economic challenges. Here it says once again, soon it will be too late to shift course away from our failing trajectory, and time is running out. We must recognize in our day-to-day lives and in our governing institutions that Earth, with all its life, is our only home. So here we are. This is the current deal, the current situation. The one thing that they do point to as a sign of hope is that we've done one thing right. We have actually collectively worked together to reduce the hole in the ozone layer. And so now we have, once again, 15,000 scientists warning of this dire situation. Of course, it must be fake news if it's 15,000 scientists, but maybe it's real news. So I want to welcome our guest, Bruce Lipton. Welcome, Bruce.
Steve, I'm so happy to be here with you and, to start off this whole new series on Wikipolitiki. Is that it? Yeah. Well, what's really interesting about this is, as you said, if you want to talk about evolution, we can talk about those sociological and psychological economic implications. But the basic foundation of evolution, by definition, is biology. And when we leave the biology out, then we're just playing with memes at the time and not really understanding where we are and where we're going. And biology has been telling us for a long time. Again, I want to thank you for this opportunity because I know our audience are cultural creatives. Our audience are people who are really looking to move into another world. So I'm very honored to have an opportunity to speak with them.
Well, okay, let's just jump right in with biology. What does biology say about where we are right now?
Well, biology is revealing a very important fact. So just a couple of facts. You know, it's interesting because I've been putting the sixth mass extinction as part of my lectures since 2010. It was like in 2010, we're already in the mass extinction. Now we're in it. And I said, well, what is mass extinction? Basically, it says this, that five times in the history of this planet, life was thriving. And it was just rich and going full out. And then some catastrophic event led to from between 70 to 90% of all life being wiped out. Five times this happened. The last time, 66 million years ago, was when the dinosaurs were here. Now, of course, the ecosystem was really thriving, and then all of a sudden the dinosaurs disappeared, and now when we go back, we recognize that a comet or asteroid hit Earth somewhere near Mexico, and it was so big it just upended the ecosystem around the planet, and 70 to 90% of animals, including the dinosaurs, disappeared from this planet. Today, we're facing that very same problem of massive loss of animal and plant life on this planet. And it's gone so far that we're deep into the sixth mass extinction. Now, the fact is this, that this mass extinction is not due to things like comets or tectonic plate movements. Science has recognized that human behavior is responsible for undermining the ecosystem, the way we are polluting the environment and raping and pillaging nature herself, cannot continue. And so we're hitting this wall. And the facts that I just gave, like last week in a lecture, is if you were here in 1970, they took a survey of how many animals were on this planet. And they just redid the survey. 62% of the animals that were on the planet are now gone. We're left with about one third of the animals. Fish stories even worse. Since 1950, we've lost 90% of the fish in the ocean. And the estimate is now 2048, there will be no fish in the ocean. And that's like a science fiction story. Planet Earth, no fish. And that's because we're overfishing. We're destroying breeding grounds and, of course, polluting the sea itself. And I just got a report last week. In Germany, they've been 27 years, they've been taking surveys in their national parks of the population of insects. And they just reported last week that the number of insects is down 75%. And so what we're looking at is there's a collapse of the ecosystem. And the important part about it is sometimes we as humans perceive that we were here separate from the ecosystem, like in a biblical story is like, let's create nature and then we add on humans as an option at the end. And that somehow we were separate and distinct from nature and that we had dominion over nature. And with that dominion, what have we done? We've undermined the system. And now the numbers of 70% or more of animal and plant life is actually happening, that we are losing that much, which is the sign of this mass extinction. And people don't realize one important fact, and that one fact is this, that we are one of the species that will be lost in this mass extinction. So we're looking at our own ending. And you say, oh, how many thousand years will this be? And now they're talking decades. And one last thing is that NASA did a massive scientific assessment of world situation. The conclusion is clear and unambiguous. And the conclusion is that within a couple of decades, industrial civilization will face an irreversible collapse. So we're looking at the world right now. And what we're seeing from a biological point of view is that our own future as humans and organisms on this planet is so severely threatened that our own extinction is looming in front of us. And as scientists recognize, we are the ones that are killing ourselves. And as you and I have talked about in the past, Steve, that this is the time for evolution for this reason. When you hit the wall, you can't keep going in the same direction anymore. And the issue is the way we've been living on this planet, the cultural understanding of our relationship to nature is so broken that we are destroying ourselves. We are hitting this wall. And what happens when you hit the wall? You have to do something different. And so crisis precipitates evolution. And the crisis that we're facing says either we as a species evolve now or kiss it all goodbye.
And, obviously it's the human ecosystem and the planetary ecosystem. And we know which one is going to win.
The Earth will be very happy without us. In fact, in a humorous sense, like the Earth is having a problem. It's infected by humans, and nature is trying to clean up that infection right now. Because if we eliminate humans, nature will come back into harmony again. We're the ones that are out of harmony. Nature is always in harmony. Remember those lines that we wrote in Spontaneous Evolution, that the Garden of Eden is not a battleground. You know, this is a harmony, is a cooperation among all organisms, with the exception of us.
Well, here we are right now, and this is, one might ask, well, this is a pretty dire situation. What points us in the direction of emerging from this and evolving through this?
Well, the most important thing is our behavior as humans and our relationship to nature has to be rewritten in a way that is in harmony with life. That we are so antagonistic to nature that, of course, that's why we're undermining the web.
And we're overmining. We're definitely overmining, undermining. Right,
you know,
there.
And it's kind of interesting because, as you mentioned in the introduction, this is not a new story. This story has been around since the 1990s. And the reality is, well, why haven't we talked about it? And the answer is very simple. Because it's corporate greed that is really driving the undermining of our civilization with overmining, as you just said. And the reality about that is corporations are actually putting pressure on preventing this information from coming out, because when we understand that how we are destroying the environment with corporate greed, then it would really come back that corporations have to change. And with all that money, that change has been put out of our consciousness. And the reality, in fact, and it's important because as you and I have written, and very important, is that the evolution we're facing is not a physical evolution. Humans aren't going to change in their physicality. What we're changing is in consciousness, our awareness of who we are, how we are, what we are relating to in regard to nature, and who are we in that story. We have a misunderstanding that somehow we and nature are separate from each other, when the simple biological truth is we evolved from nature. Point. If nature is broken, then we can no longer sustain ourselves on this planet, and that's the feedback we're getting right now.
Good. We'll be right back with Bruce Lipton. We're going to talk a little bit more about what we can do.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Bierman back here with Bruce Lipton. We were just talking about the the sixth great extinction. And as the Swami has said, if we lose the earth, there goes the GDP. So everything kind of collapses with that. So we want to get into a little good news here. This idea of consciousness, this is a conscious evolution process that we have right now. How can that take us from where we are to where we need to go or could go?
Well, there's an exciting story because it's based on new science. And the new science I'm start with is quantum mechanics. And people say, oh, yeah, that's that weird course and, you know, weird stuff goes on in quantum mechanics. And we sort of like look at it, even if you study quantum mechanics, like, well, in the classroom, yeah, I studied it. And then I left the classroom and went to the mall shop and back into the old world. And the simple reality is this. Quantum physics is the most valid of all the sciences on this planet. There is no science more truthful. And I say, well, why is it relevant? I say, well, the fundamental principle of quantum physics, which was established in 1925, is that human consciousness is creating the unfolding of the experience that we have in this universe. So that all of a sudden, the first thing it says is that how we are creating our consciousness is shaping the world in which we're living. This is a fact of science. Now, you can say, well, that's really nice and weird and go back to your regular life. And I say, no. It's not a choice. Do you want to believe in quantum physics or Newtonian physics? That's our current belief, which separates the invisible world from the mechanical world. And Newtonian physics has said, you don't need to worry about the invisible world. That's a separate entity. And that in a Newtonian world, a human body, for example, is matter, mechanical machine. And the only thing that affects matter and mechanical machines is other matter and other mechanical machines. So we have systematically left out the invisible realm. And I say, well, what is that? Well, I say, that's consciousness, that's energy, that's a field that we talk about that we are immersed in. It's like we're in an aquarium of energy. And I said, we've ignored that in Newtonian world. It's not relevant. And now quantum physics comes around and says, the field, which is the invisible energy. Listen, this simple quote from Albert Einstein, profound and simple, the field is the sole governing agency of the particle. I say, okay, what the heck does that mean? I say, well, the field is the invisible energy around us, and it says the particle is matter, the physical world. So basically what he's saying is the energy, the invisible field, is the sole governing agency of matter. And I say, well, what is that energy? And the first thing is this, human consciousness, that thoughts are energy. And that's why we've left consciousness and the function of consciousness out of medicine. Why? Medicine is Newtonian. The only thing that affects a body is another physical thing, like drugs, okay? And yet quantum physics said, no, it's the energy that is more profound. And consciousness is energy, and that's why they come back to the foundation. Our consciousness is creating the world. So I say, well, what do we need to change? I say, we don't need to change the world. What we need to do is change how we respond to the world because we're creating this. Now, a lot of people go, oh, that sounds so New Agey. And again, I say, no, this is the foundation of quantum mechanics. And there is no science more truthful. So when do we sit down and start owning how I'm thinking and how I'm behaving is a powerful energy field that is shaping the world. That's the truth. So it says if you want to change the world, you don't have to go out and physically change the world. What we need to do is just change how we respond to the world, how we connect to the world. So the first thing is this. We want to move from where we are. Then the first thing is we have to recognize we're not victims on a planet, that things are happening and out of our control. We are the creator of that planet. If a large enough population wants to create war, that's how wars start. But if a large enough population wants to create peace, that's how peace starts. And so what we have to do is change the politic of this competition. And this takes us back to a Darwinian story. And the Darwinian story, which is the shaper of the culture, that science shapes our culture, is based on two steps. The first step in Darwinian evolution is there's an alteration of genetics in an organism, like two dogs mate, make a litter of puppies, and then there's that one weirdo, you know, the runt of the litter. And it's like, well, there's a genetic alteration. And what was the purpose of Darwinian theory? If you mate two runts, then you're creating a lineage of runts, and that could lead to a whole new species. And people start to say, oh, yeah, that genetics and accidents in genetics are responsible for changing the species. And if you look at Darwinian theory, then we say over 3.5 billion years, genetic accidents led from a bacterium to the expression of human population. And so we're here by accident. I go, well, biggest problem is that I say, well, according to Darwinian theory and the principles, then why are we on this planet? And unfortunately, the answer turns out, well, there's no reason for us to be on this planet. It was a whole bunch of accidents and genetics. So I say, well, there's no purpose for us. And I go, oh, my God, first mistake. The mistake is this. Nature is an interactive community. Every organism in nature was introduced by nature to bring harmony and balance to the garden. And as you and I wrote, Steve, that garden is not the battlefield that we believe it is. The garden is cooperation. The only uncooperative elements in the garden appear to be humans at this point. And so it says, no, we do have a purpose. We're here to bring harmony. And that takes us back to the indigenous people. Like the Native Americans and First Nation people in Canada, go back 10,000 years ago and realize what they knew. They said, this is a garden, and that as humans in the garden, their job was to be gardeners. And all we've done is come into the world since then and have exploited this garden. And the reality, so we're not active participants in this harmony. So we're the ones that are actually causing this. And I say, well, what's the relevance? Well, we're the ones that nature wants to get rid of. And so I always joke about it, sort of like the earth is infected with humans. And that's why rising temperatures, it got a fever to kill off the humans. And it's like, well, that's almost a joke and not a joke. But this is it. And then part two of the theory that we write about. And I'm so happy to be with you because our collaboration really provides a pathway to take us from this point into a future where thriving rather than surviving is the value. The second part of the theory is based on competition. So it says, yeah, a new organism is created because of a genetic mutation. And will that organism survive in the world or will it die out? It's based on competition. So all of a sudden I say, well, Darwinian theory has two points. A, random events led to us being here. And now that we're here, we're in a battle of competition, as they say, you know, a struggle for survival with a competition for fitness. I said, well, what does that mean? I said, well, that means you and I are struggling. Who's going to be able to survive in this belief system that it's based on the fittest? So we're going to find out who's the fittest. And unfortunately, it comes to war and violence and war. Who's the fittest? I think I read the quote. It was really interesting. What does war do? It's not, war doesn't say who's right. War says who's left over. and the reality about that is we're in a world of competition. Competing with each other for what? Material goods in a Newtonian world, because matter is separate and everybody says, well, where's my standing in the world? I say, well, how much goods do you have? And, you know, then there's the rise of all those storage places, which to me is a big joke. We have so much matter that I can't keep it in a house. I have to actually rent storage spaces to keep my matter, you know. And I say, but where are you getting your matter from? Oh, you're exploiting the planet. And how much matter is left? Well, not that much. And here's an interesting joke. Why do corporations put down climate change? And the answer is simply this. We've exploited and taken the resources from everything that's exposed at this point. The resources that are left untouched on this planet are in the Arctic regions. And this relevance is, well, what? Well, the Arctic ice is melting. And while we're all looking at, oh, my God, rising sea levels and all the problems and climate change and all that, corporate people are jumping up and down in joy because they're saying, oh, brand new places to you know, rip off the earth with more of the reserves that we haven't been able to touch. So corporations are antagonistic to our belief about climate change because in the end, it's their profit motive. They're going to get more minerals out of the Arctic if they can dig there if there's no ice. And it's like, oh, my God, where's the vision of people? And the idea is it's short term. It's like, what do I can get right now? And I don't care about offspring. And, you know, we go back to the Native Americans. I say, how many generations?
Seven generations. That's what that was all about.
And it was relevant because they said, if I'm not taking care of this, then my seventh generation will not have anything. And right now, seven generations, God, we're looking, according to NASA, maybe two generations.
As we call them, degenerations. We have two more degenerations before we degenerated, and there's no more generations.
So the point is simply this. We have to learn that, A, we are nature. We are not separate from nature. B, that our creativity, according to quantum mechanics, is determining the expression of this world that it's in. And I say, well, consciousness is our creativity. So if you want to change the world we're in, we don't have to go out, as we mentioned, and change the physical world. We have to change our consciousness about the world. And so this evolution, again, is not a genetic evolution, but it's an intellectual evolution. And it almost looked like the intellectual dark ages that we just come into. But there's a good point to this, Steve. And it's like, why are we going through this? And it's not a coincidence or accident. It's part of an evolution. And the point is simply this. The structure that we have been living in for the last several hundred years of industrial civilization with competition is causing the problem. We must move into a civilization where harmony and working together, not competition, cooperation is the foundation. I say, well, that changes the structure. And then all of a sudden you say, well, wait, if you're going to go from structure A to structure B, you have to go through a transition period because the structure of the old form is not supporting the structure of the new form. So a structure of the old form must come down as we're building a new one up. We can go back to the story we like to use about butterflies and caterpillars. I say the caterpillar is an old form of civilization. You know what's interesting? Caterpillars feed on one of the monarch butterfly feeds on milkweed. And there's this beautiful milkweed bush where I live in New Zealand. And I watch the monarchs come in, lay their eggs, and then the caterpillars take over. And you know what happens? Starts out as this beautiful lush bush. And the next thing you know, the caterpillars have eaten every damn leaf off of the bush, and now there's just a bunch of stems there, and everything's. And then, well, guess what? Caterpillars reached the end. They destroyed everything that they were living on, and guess what? Now it's time for a transformation, and that's when they go into the pupa, the chrysalis. I say, well, what happens? Well, that's exactly where we are in the world right now. The structure of the caterpillar that lived in the world where it was self-destructive, that structure starts to come apart. The cells turn into soup, and then the soup actually reforms, and the soup of cells becomes a butterfly. What's the point? You can't go from caterpillar to butterfly without the transition phase, the coming apart of the old and the building of the new. So when we look at the world today, you have two ways of looking at it. You go, oh, my God, the thing's falling apart. It's the end of everything, you know, and that's everybody throws their hands up and it's all over. And I go, no. You have to look at the positive side of this. The structure that we're living in is not sustainable. That to move into a sustainable world reorganizes the structure of civilization. And so by definition, the period we are in right now, the chaos that looks like falling apart, which it is actually the foundation of building up. So when we look at the world, you have two choices. You can go out there and go, oh, my God, I'm afraid the whole thing's falling apart. And I go, man, if it doesn't fall apart, we're in the worst situation you can ever imagine. So let's celebrate the coming down because it's really the seeds that are needed to build back up.
I love what you said last night about Greg. Oh, we'll talk about Greg Braden's insight when we get back after this message.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
I rescued Toes from a shelter in 2011. I love Toes because she's a lazy diva. Toes does whatever she wants, obviously. She's sleeping right now. She's so loving. She's so comforting. When I walked into the shelter, I knew right then that she was special.
Toast, Instagram star and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Start yours today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
How long can you stay in protection? Answers.
We are back with Bruce Lipton, and we've heard the bad news. We've heard about our current situation, which is dire in regards to mass extinction. We know the score. We also know that nature bats last, and she has her heavy hitters coming up. So now what we want to recognize is, now that we know what's so in that regard, so what? What is it that evolution, what does biology and evolution tell us about our positive future, Bruce?
Well, if we stick with a conventional Darwinian story, there is no positive future, because it's a world that is, Tennyson wrote, red in tooth and claw, and we're surely manifesting that right now. But the question is that view of evolution accurate? And the answer is absolutely no. Number one, it's based on genetics. And we say, yeah, as you go up the evolutionary tree, there's more and more genes. And then when you get to the human, there's got to be a lot of genes to account for all these characteristics. And science has revealed recently in doing genome projects that the human has about 20,000 genes, which is the same number as a 1,271-cell worm has 20,000 genes. So looking at evolution scoring genes is incorrect. I say, so what would be the metric? What is it that we can see that is really the foundation of evolution? It turns out it's consciousness, nervous system evolution. That as you go up the evolutionary tree, there's greater and greater nervous system development with greater and greater expression of consciousness. So scoring consciousness as a drive of evolution gives us a whole different perspective on the nature of our future. And it also takes away the whole concept of that competition, struggle for survival, because what we're going to do is recognize that with increasing consciousness, there's increasing harmony and community. And that's what it's based on. And it's interesting, because when we look at evolution in terms of consciousness, we get a different pattern than the pattern or absence of pattern, so to speak, in Darwinian theory, which is just a bunch of random changes over 3.5 billion years. And ultimately, through all these accidents, here we are. And there's a different story. And the different story is this. If we start measuring consciousness, then we say, well, what is consciousness? And at first it sounds like an abstract story. But when we go back to the basics of cell biology, we recognize that consciousness is the fundamental unit of consciousness is a protein complex in a cell membrane called a perception unit, which involves a receptor and an effector. The receptor is the input receiving a stimulus. The effector is the output, which manifests a response. So it's stimulus, response, input, output. And these are fundamental units. And I say, well, the more fundamental units you have, the more awareness you have. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, we can translate evolution into a physical expression of consciousness. And I go, oh, now you understand that. Then we recognize membrane surface area is a direct proportion to perception units built into the membrane. You want more perception units, you have to increase surface area. And all of a sudden it says, oh, well, then if we look at evolution as surface area, then we see a new pattern that we didn't see before, and that is we start with a bacterium. And we say, how do you make the smartest bacteria? I say, well, you create the best cell membrane, which is the equivalent of a computer chip, a carbon-based computer chip with the perception units, those bits. I say, well, the problem with a bacterium, it's got a capsule around it, a hard wall, and you can only put so much membrane in it. So I say, well, at some point you make the smartest bacterium. You can't make it any smarter because you can't put any more membrane inside the capsule. I say, oh, evolution stopped. Couldn't make a smarter bacterium. I say, ah, but nature saw a second character, and that is this. What if you take a bunch of individual bacteria, bring them together in a community, and they share awareness? I say, ah. So first level of evolution, take the individual, make the smartest one. Second level of evolution is once you got the smartest individuals, put them together in a community, and then they create a cooperative organization with more intelligence. So a community of bacteria led to the evolution of what's called an amoeba. Amoeba is the advanced cell type compared to what is a bacterial cell. It's called a prokaryote. Amoeba is called a eukaryote. It's got a nucleus, and it changes. And I go, well, that's interesting. A community of bacteria evolved into a cell called an amoeba. So by definition, amoeba is a community of bacteria. And I go, then what? Well, next phase of evolution, make the smartest amoeba you can. And the issue is, how much membrane can an amoeba have? Well, 1,000 times more membrane than bacteria. So an individual amoeba is at least 1,000 times more intelligent. But even amoeba has a certain amount of membrane. Why? If the amoeba gets too big, the membrane will rupture and the cell will die. So all of a sudden it says, oh my God, then the amoeba, you're making the smartest amoeba, you end up making the smartest amoeba. Why? You can't add another perception unit because that now makes the membrane fragile. I say, oh my God, evolution stopped again. I go, yeah, it stopped in the making the smartest individual amoeba. The next level of evolution was to bring amoebas together in community. And I go, where did that go to? And I go, as Steve and I write about, a human being is a community of 50 trillion amoebas. And so I said, oh, so the amoebas came together in phase two to make community. And what happened? They created a new organism, a human being. And then I say, oh, well, the pattern we've seen is first you create an organism, make the smartest one, phase one. Phase two, once you get the smartest individual, you bring them together in community and make the smartest community. So I say, oh, so human evolution occurred several hundred thousand years ago at the latest. And I say, then what? I say, we made the smartest humans. And I say, well, then what happened? Well, once the smartest humans were made, the evolution of human community, first as a family and a clan and a tribe and then a state and then a country, is what? Humans coming together in community. And I go, yeah, that's phase two of evolution. I say, and what's phase two lead to? I said, well, the smartest community that evolves becomes a new organism, and that's the repetitive pattern in fractal geometry. And that is the geometry of our planet, fractal. And important part about fractals, the educational important part about fractals, is that fractals are made of repetitive self-similar units. In other words, it's a simple equation just repeated and repeated, which means that the images repeat themselves periodically. So as above, so below is not a mystical statement. As above, so below is a mechanical premise built into fractals. Fractals say if you can understand the pattern at any organism on a lower scale of the structure, you're going to have a self-similar pattern in a higher scale. And that is why then the pattern of evolution is two phases. A, make the smartest individual. B, once the smartest individual is created, then make it a community of those smart individuals, which evolves into the new organism. So where are we? We've made the smartest humans. And about 30,000 years ago, humans started to come together, and that's when technology started. And the more humans that come together, the more technology we have, and the faster it is. And today, the population is growing so fast in community that yesterday's brand new technology today might be outdated. And I say, ah, yeah, and where are we leading? I said, the evolution of that community is going to create something collectively whole, a new organism. And I say, oh, and the name of that new organism? Humanity. Humanity is a multicellular organism where humans are cells comprising it. And I go, oh, so we're in phase two of this level of evolution, come together as a community with the evolution of something new in front of us. And I say, we're right on the edge of that something new. Stephen, you and I have very clearly have been over hundreds of hours of talking about this and creating spontaneous evolution to recognize civilization is poised on the threshold of recognizing a superorganism, humanity, and that we are all, every human on this planet, part of the same organism, humanity. And once we recognize we're all cells in the same system, the violence, the competition, the self-destruction that we're manifesting will be passé. It'll be like, this is not what makes a new organism. Harmony and community makes the organism. And we're on the threshold of that as you see the world breaking down the barriers that have separated us, you know, country boundaries, are, especially with the development of the internet, a global nervous system that says, yes, every cell on the planet can be hooked up at once into one living organism connected to this internet, which is a nervous system for humanity. And as this is evolving, as we're doing it right now, even doing this presentation as part of this nervous system, is to provide awareness. And that awareness, when understood by the population, will completely change the culture directive. The competition will drop out. Community and harmony will be recognized as the sole generator of the future that we're looking at. And so we're into this issue right now. And the point about it is we're evolving. And when we evolve, then basically we have opportunities to move beyond this story.
Well, it's a very, very interesting phase right now because it seems like everything that is the opposite of what we're going to have to do is up in our face. And I'm thinking, I had the thought recently that, you know, maybe Donald Trump is something that is designed to strengthen our immune system as we learn to discern the difference between real information, fake information. as we learn ways that we've been manipulated into these patterns of separation that we might call autoimmune dysfunction.
Right. It's sort of a healthcare crisis. It's a health crisis. When we talk about a health crisis, when something happens to the body mm-hmm. that causes the body to make some action
yeah.
to move out of it. And the world of politics today, which is not just in the U.S., because we're beginning to find that this right-wing, you know, throwback to cave mentality yeah. Is not just in the U.S., it's going around the world at this time. So the entire human population is beginning to face, do you want to go to be a throwback, or do you want to let go of that opportunity and learn and move forward? And this is what we're seeing, like in the last election, at least a glimmer of light that said, people are gathering together to reject the current situation and say this is not what we intend, and that collectively we're going to have to come together. And I so appreciate the work that you're doing, because you're bringing polar groups together, recognizing with polarity we're stopped because we're in a standoff. And the only way to go beyond that polarity is through bringing the two polar opposites together in a harmony. And this is your work, if you want to mention that, because to me that is the destination of the future.
Well, you know, this last election, we had the choice. We could have had a choice between the throwback and the grow forward. And the grow forward was represented best as we could at this point by Bernie Sanders. And that didn't happen. We had status quo. And there was so much resistance and upset about the status quo that we elected, a sociopathogen. So at this point, part of what I'm seeing is happening is that as we become aware of how we really are all connected, and then we begin to see what's the difference between the way we've been doing things and the way forward, and we've had this mirror in our face, the mirror. The orange-haired one, the face in the mirror, because that's how we've been, only we've had a nice face slathered over it.
Yeah, the mask has come off. And underneath, people thought that whole idea of like racism and all that was gone from the system. And the fact is, no, it's live, it's vital, and it's now in your face. So it's basically pulling up the darkness that was in us. But when you pull it into the light, that's the first opportunity to say, no, we must do this because it's been hidden. And we've been operating with these hidden motives. And now it's a wake-up call that says, no, these things are coming to the front. How are you going to deal with it? And the beautiful part is the massive number of the population is really saying this is not our intention. And this is a good sign, because as more and more people are moving that direction, that gives us an opportunity to say, as a group, we don't want this. As a group, we want another level of evolution. And voting is the process. And if we vote, we have power. And if we don't vote, we give away the power to those that vote.
Yeah. And so this is part. That's how we're going to we're getting close to the end of this segment.
One more minute.
But when we come back, I really want to look more at what quantum physics has to say about all this. Because we've talked about the patterns of evolution. It seems clear that we've got this. We have the opportunity in front of us to be as an organism that benefits each and all. And then we have another opportunity to go down the other way. I think physics has an answer for us. We'll be back after this message.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times.
Om Times magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Okay, we're back with Bruce. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, well.
Okay, we're back with Bruce Lipton. We're talking about the evolutionary upwising. We're talking about recognizing the larger patterns in biology. And, you know, there's an even larger pattern than that, the patterns of quantum physics. And
that's already getting people weird. As soon as you say quantum physics, a lot of people just got glazed over in their eyes going, uh-oh, quantum physics. And to me, it's really important that they understand something. Number one, physics means mechanisms. So you can say Newtonian mechanics or Newtonian physics, quantum mechanics, quantum physics. Mechanisms means how the universe operates. The programming of the conventional population of this world is still in the belief of a Newtonian world that looks at the universe as two realms that don't interact, an energy invisible realm with energy and forces in it, whatever, and a physical mechanical realm. And when we look at it that way, then we separate humans and separate them from the energy realm and just say they're physical mechanical devices. And the next thing you know, we're programmed genetically, determined by our programs and our genetics. And all of a sudden we realize, oh my God, we're just pawns in a game where the world moves us around and we're victims. That's a Newtonian belief. And the problem with Newtonian belief is they left out the invisible world. And the invisible world was returned into our story, not just returned, but put above the physical world in something called quantum mechanics. And quantum mechanics just simply said this. Newtonian physics said an atom is made out of particles, electrons and protons, and so that's a material realm. But when quantum physicists, the physicists went and said, what the heck is the particle? What is the electron made out of, the proton? And they started to look inside. They found there was nothing physical inside these particles. They were like nano tornadoes, vortices of energy, power. And it goes, well, wait a minute. An atom is made out of no matter. And I go, absolutely. And then I say, yeah, but, I live in a material world where all this matter is here. And I go, no, that is an illusion. As Einstein said, a persistent illusion, because the simple reality is this. What we see is physical matter is not physical. It's actually energy vortices. And you say, well, how can I see it? Because by definition, energy is invisible. I go, well, you're not seeing the energy. What you're seeing is light bouncing off the energy. You can see something if the light is on. You can't see it if the light is off. I go, and then people laugh. It's like a joke. And I go, no, you don't get it. When a light is on, the photons from the light are streaming toward objects like you or me or the table that we're sitting at. I go, yeah, but when the photons hit these energy fields, which they are, the energy forces cause them to be reflected back. So you're not seeing the atoms as energy. What you're seeing is photons of light bouncing back off the energy and a reflection of energy. So a body is a reflection of photons that underneath is invisible energy. So when there's no lights on, you have no physical structure. You're this energy. And then people say, yeah, but I can feel you, so it must be physical. And I go, take a tornado. And I say, it's an energy force field. And I go, what about it? I say, drive your car through a tornado. And the answer is, no, you can't drive it through. It'd be like hitting a stone wall. I say, what do you mean? I say, because there's a force in a tornado, that force can push against what you perceive as matter, another form of energy. And then the two forces could cancel each other out, meaning I'm trying to push through, it's pushing against me, and now it's a solid wall. I can't get my hand through the wall. I said, yeah, because the atoms in the wall are tornadoes pushing against you.
So the point of visual appearance of matter, photon illusion, the physical appearance of matter, touch and all that, is field and force. And basically, so it says everything is made out of energy. I go, why is it relevant? Because quantum physics says that energy is shaping what we perceive as matter, which is just another form of energy. And then it says, well, then what we've discounted in Newtonian physics, because we separated our perception of matter from the invisible, is we left out the energy field. And then all of a sudden, you come to the conclusion of Albert Einstein, which is the field, the energy in which we're immersed, like an aquarium of energy, the field is the sole governing agency of matter. And I go, oh, my God, if you change the field, you change matter. And I go, yeah, this is a fact of physics. It's not a joke. That's a fundamental mechanism of the universe. I say, then what generates the field? I say, well, there are natural forces that generate a field, but the human consciousness is a field generator. So I say, yeah, human consciousness is going out in the field and interacting with the field. It's called entanglement, and our consciousness is influencing the shape of the field. Change your consciousness, and you change the field. So when you look at the world, you say, yeah, look at the world. We got all this pollution. We got war. We got violence. I go, that's a field expression. Change the belief, which is the field generator, and the matter will change along with it. So evolution is not to change the bodies. That's not relevant at all. It's to change the field. And I say, yeah, but that's your mind. And I say, yes, our beliefs are creating the world. And then when we look at psychologists' review of the beliefs that we acquire during our development, 70% of these beliefs are disempowering, self-sabotaging, eliminating. So I say, you're a tuning fork broadcasting a field, right? And I say, but the field that we're broadcasting, which has been programmed, is not a field of harmony and growth and health and love. It is a field that leads us into the belief of competition and violence and all that other stuff. I say, but that's a field. I say, in the Honeymoon Effect book, I talk about you can have a life every day is like blah, 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 life every day, your whole life. And then one day you meet this person and you fall in love. And I say 24 hours later, your world is completely different. 24 hours later, you're healthy, you're happy, you got energy. You look at the world and go, oh, my God, heaven on earth. It's so beautiful and enjoyable. I say, what? You lived your whole life up until 24 hours ago, and that was a sucky world. And then 24 hours after you meet this person, you have heaven on earth. I go, we now know that is because science has recognized the moment we fall in love, we stop playing the programs that are operating 95% of the time. The moment we stop playing the programs and we start operating from consciousness, which is creativity, then given the freedom of creativity in a period of love, you didn't create war. You created heaven on earth. I go, well, that was always available for creativity. But when we drop back into subconscious programming, which is the consequence of thinking, when we redirect our conscious mind instead of dealing with the outside world, we're thinking inside job, then autopilot that keeps us moving in the outside world is subconscious. So whatever the programs are in the subconscious, they start manifesting their expression when we're thinking, because when we're thinking, we're not paying attention. And so basically it says then your world is not really normally the results of your conscious creativity. Your world is a result of your programming. But the time you stop playing the program, such as falling in love, then the entire worldview changes. And I go, so consider a simple possibility. One day everybody wakes up in love. And I guess what? Then heaven on earth is for everybody at the same time. And all of a sudden it's like, well, that's what evolution is all about. Getting out of the limitation programs that we were given. And again, the idea that we were programmed is not new. Jesuits for 400 years said, give me that child until it's seven, I will show you the man. They knew that the seven-year programming is going to operate 95% of the time. So whatever that program is, that's the manifestation. And I'm saying, they knew that, and so do the people running the world today know that. Our programming, we've been programmed better than even the Jesuits knew how to do programming.
You know, you said something very interesting, which has to do with the way we're in our heads or we're in our hearts. And Heart Math Institute, and they were instrumental in my understanding of how this thing called heart coherence is a way for us to entrain like pendulums, like tuning forks.
Yes.
And so there are things that we can actually do, things we can focus on, concentrate, practice, that allow us to be in this heart coherent space more.
Yeah, and as you practice it, and you see, there are two fundamental natural ways of putting programs in the subconscious. The first 7 years, we brain state using electroencephalograph revealed that our brain function was in a low vibration called theta. Theta is imagination. That's why kids between 2 and 7 can mix the imaginary and real world and not tell the difference. So they ride a broom, and to them, it's a horse. No, I mean, to that kid, it's a live, breathing horse. That's a character of theta. The more important character of theta is hypnosis. So it says the first 7 years, your brain is not operating in consciousness. It's operating in hypnosis. You need to download programs so that when consciousness kicks in at 7, there's something to be conscious of. If there's nothing in the database, and I say, well, tell me something, and you have nothing in the database, I don't know anything. I go, well, there's the end of consciousness right there. So programming was necessary. But the fact is we've been programmed by other people. And also we now know that the Jesuits were way ahead of the game 400 years, knowing that that program will manifest your life. Well, today's programmers are more effective at the Jesuits, programming us to be victims. And I say, why is it relevant? Because if we're victims, then somebody can make money off of us. If you're free and independent, then you don't have to give away your money to somebody. But if you say, oh, my health, I'm not in charge of my health. My genes did this. I'm a victim. Who's going to help me? I'm a victim. And the pharmaceutical company says, oh, we can help you. We got these chemicals. It's like, oh, how much do they cost? And there you go. You want to have C to be taken? That's a $100,000 bill right there. You know, and it's like, holy geez. And the simple reality was, do I need them? And the answer is only if you believe you do. And that's why when we have lost the belief in our own power, who we are, creators, spiritual entities in a biological suit, living out a reality on this planet, if I program the suit to be stupid and powerless, then I have a robot that's stupid and powerless. And I go, look, Tony Benn, member of parliament in London, said, governments do not want a healthy, intelligent population because they're difficult to control. And he said the first thing to do is scare them, because if you scare them, then they're immediately letting go of, oh, my God, I'm afraid. And that's the moment where then you can take over. And I go, this idea that intelligence and health is not suitable for, you know, for a government because it's difficult to control. I go back, you know, look, I'm 73 now. I go back when I was a kid, post-World War II, and recognize the United States was one of the healthiest, most intelligent populations in the world. And I say, and where are we today? In the world standing in the West, we have the worst healthcare system crisis going on in this world. And we have more fetal, you know, death than underdeveloped worlds have, and here we are in this world, and we become the least intelligent. And I go, wow. From that point from post-World War, where we're the smartest and healthiest country in the world, we are now the dumbest and the sickest country in the world. And I go, what a coincidence. I go, it's not a coincidence. It was an intention of the system to disempower so we can be manipulated. And thank God you're here, Steve, and giving an opportunity for us to talk about this is to give the power back by recognizing your only disempowerment is just a program.
And, you know, in our book, we did talk about the three-step program because, frankly, who has time for 12? It works four times faster. Step one is awareness. Step two is intention. And step three is action in the world. Now, to get to that action, Puck, people are going to go, okay, yes, so it's all very out there. What do we actually do about it? I want to go back to the fractal nature of the human body and the body politic and talk about telomeres. And in terms of telomeres, there's something that helps. Tell us about telomeres.
Well, telomeres are really important. telomeres are important. They're extensions of the DNA that are not coding. They're not genes. It's just like DNA that doesn't code. And they're at the ends of the DNA. And I say, well, why should I have telomeres there? And the answer is this. The mechanism to copy DNA involves a protein moving down the DNA like a train on a railroad tracks. When a train gets to the end of the railroad track, it copied the DNA behind it. But guess what? Where the train is sitting on the track, it cannot copy that part. And the next move of the train will be off the track. So what was the point? Every time you copy the DNA, it's shorter than the previous time. And therefore, what we have thought to believe is that our life is limited because how many times the cells divide will then lead us to a life of about 90 years of age. But we now know that being in service and being in harmony with the world enhances an enzyme called telomerase, which extends the telomeres, which all of a sudden says there is no limit of our lifetime. The only limit of our lifetime is when that enzyme isn't working, and that enzyme stops working when we're in fear and violence and all that. It works when we're in service to the world. It works when we're in gratitude to the world and when we're in positive thinking. And that's where we have to shift to, because we want our power back and we want our lives back, and recognizing that telomeres are a reflection of that. We can do something.
Wow. Well, we are coming very quickly to the end of our time here. Bruce, this has been quite amazing. And really what you're saying is that the one way that we know that we're moving in the right direction is through the power of love and the power of service. What we're doing in service to other people, how we're serving for the betterment of each and all, for the individual selves, for the collective humanity, which I prefer calling humankind, because the currency is human kindness. So biology, if we pay attention, tells us that we're all connected, and it tells us that our evolution is in affirming that connection. So the good news is Jesus and Einstein were both right. Jesus, Einstein, and Bruce Lipton, it's a no contest. Thank you, Brucey, for being with us.
Thank you, my friend. Dear Stevie, thank you very much. And we love our audience, because those are the cultural creatives that are going to show we can move into heaven on earth.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Wiki Politiki, Steve Behrman. More soon.